Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome back to the game podcast from These Football Times. We have dusted it down from the boot room and we are back again talking about some of the pressing issues in modern football. Modern football aficionado Dave Bowler joins me today. Hello, Dave.
Yes, modern football aficionado. It seems like forever since we were here last, but there's plenty to talk about since then.
Definitely, yes. We are going to focus on something, not prematurely, I hope, but we're going to look at the opening of a possible chasm between the Premier League and the Championship. Unfortunately, we've already relegated the three teams that are in the bottom three places already, so I do apologise for any Leicester fans, any Ipswich fans, any Southampton fans who might be listening to this thinking, hang on a minute, we haven't actually been relegated yet, so we do apologise for that, but we are going to pretty much take it that, unfortunately, you might not have enough to stay up. And we're going to try and look at the actual gap between the two leagues and what that looks like. But we're going to try and start off with that statistic, Dave, that in the last season, three promoted teams were relegated. And before that, the only other time it's ever happened was in 1997, 1998, which for a lot of people might seem very strange and they might kind of feel like this happens all the time. But Bolton, Barnsley and Crystal Palace was the very last time that three teams went down together after being promoted. Do you think, and we'll get into some of the reasons why, do you think this is another freak, or are we going to start to see a pattern emerge over the next 3, 5, 10 years?
I mean, first of all, it is an amazing statistic when you were talking about that earlier. It doesn't feel like that's right somehow. I mean, it feels like it's happened more often than that, but I think it is showing that it's becoming increasingly difficult to compete in the Premier League. I think that's for sure, because as the money gets bigger, once you've had it for two or three seasons, the differential between you and somebody coming up is immense. I don't know whether it's always going to be a trend, I'm not sure, but I mean, I think the worrying thing about this season in particular is that Leicester and Southampton have been so bad. I mean, given that they both had one season away from the Premier League, and okay, they had their problems which contributed to them going down in the first place. But, you know, they had one season away, they were straight back in, and both of them have been pretty abject, really. I mean, particularly Southampton, but even Leicester, you would have felt, would have made a better fist of it. Ipswich, in fairness, it's 22, 23 years since they've been in the Premier League. You know, a little bit like Luton last season. I mean, it's a big step up, and particularly when you consider they were in League One 2 seasons ago. It's kind of understandable that it was always going to be a tough ask for Ipswich. And given that I do work for Ipswich's programme, I'm not going to concede that they've gone down yet. So, but I think that's the really interesting thing for me is just how Southampton and Leicester have struggled. And because it feels like they shouldn't, you know, I think, was it Leicester had about 8 years in a row in the Premier League? I think Southampton had, was it 8 or 9 out of 10 or something like that? It doesn't feel like they should have been in such a mess as they are this time around. That is the one that really, I think, is a bit concerning for this particular statistic. Because if they can't make a fist of it, who's going to make a fist of it then?
Yeah, I think it's interesting with those two teams going down. So when they went down, Leicester and Southampton, it was like they were worse than the promoted teams because of what they'd done badly. You know, Southampton went down a really strange route of signing lots and lots of Manchester City's youth team, effectively. And granted, they have made some money. Lavia, who is now at Chelsea, is one of the players that they bought. I think they bought him for about 14 or 15 million, maybe, something like that. And then they sold him for 50 or whatever it was. But if you look at the recruitment that they did that year, so many unproven players that you think were such a big risk. And I think maybe they got to a point in the Premier League where they felt like they had to do something different. I think Brighton have got a lot to answer for. Actually, in the grand scheme of football, to be honest, because everybody's now thinking we need to be going into the Brentford model, the Brighton model of, you know, being sustainable and building from the bottom or whatever. Southampton were that team, if you remember. You know, when Pochettino was brought in, They developed this really high-pressing style. They bought people like Mane, Graziano, Pella. And they were kind of the Brighton, weren't they? They were kind of that team who were sort of on the up. They were on the emergence. People forget about Leicester as well under Brendan Rodgers. They were a really, really good side. They were like a top six, top eight side. I know they had a bit of a wobble after they won the league, didn't they? Because they had Champions League commitments and that's hard work. Aston Villa have found that this season, haven't they? It's hard work doing two strong competitions at the same time if you're not Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool. It's hard work, isn't it? And I think what's happened is for a team like Southampton, they went too far the other way. When they've gone down, obviously a lot of those players have been quite good for that level because they just weren't quite ready for the Premier League yet. And obviously they've got a load of money that they can put towards it. Leicester are a funny one, I think, because I think Leicester, they didn't really do any sort of renewal for me in the Championship. Like some clubs use it as a bit of, let's get rid of some of these players who maybe have tainted a little bit, you know, they're not the hardest workers or they're not the most effective. Let's get rid of them and let's sort of change how we approach it. I don't think Leicester have quite done that. Ipswich, like you say, Dave, they're like Luton, aren't they? They've come up with a League One squad. I mean, they were phenomenal in the Championship last season. I think they were the second highest goal scorers, I think, or even higher scores. 92 goals or 90 goals or something like that. It was pretty incredible statistic. But it's hard work, isn't it, in the Prem when, you know, 60 of players probably started 30-plus games in League One. I said to you before we came on, Dave, I think I'd read somewhere that Ipswich's squad cost 140 million or something, and they spent 130 of that this year. But Wolves has cost 250, and they're 17th. So already Ipswich are £100 million worse off, if you like, just by being promoted. Do you think, I mean, it's probably a mixture of the two. Player quality is so crucial, isn't it? Do you think these clubs are using the money well when they come up? It's probably where we'll start.
I mean, that's a really good question, isn't it? I think you look at Ipswich for starters. One of the things that Ipswich, of course, have come up against is, yes, we've got all this money from the Premier League, but we can't spend it because of the PSR and the fair play and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, they might have wanted to spend more money, perhaps, I don't know, or spend it on different players. But obviously there's those regulations that bite in. I mean, you know, I remember, I think it was just before Christmas, one of the games. So we were halfway into the season, and one of the games, seven of the players who'd played in League One started the game in the Premier League. I mean, that is a fantastic achievement from those players, never mind anything else. But that's pretty tough coming up against hardened Premier League footballers who know what that level is about and all of that kind of stuff. Have they bought well? I mean, I think the one that you would point to with that, and I know the FA Cup isn't necessarily a barometer, but if you look at Coventry City, we're going like a train at the minute under Frank Lampard, of all people. Ipswich went to Coventry two games out from the end of last season, and they struggled to a 2-1 win. Vital win, but it was a tough one. They went to Coventry in the FA Cup 3 weeks ago, and they stuffed them 4-1. It was finished by half-time, virtually. Now, I'm not saying that if Ipswich go down, they'll do that 46 times next season, but it suggests that they've come on a hell of a lot from what they were last season, and 120 million, 130 million, or to make it come on quite a bit from where you were the previous season. There's a real difficulty when you get into the Premier League of getting players in. That is the most difficult thing because I remember this from being at the Albion. You come to that last week in August and you haven't bought as many players as you want to. Because what you're doing is you're waiting for the players that you want. And the players that you want are all hanging on saying, well, I might get somebody in the top half of the Premier League who wants me. So I'm not going to go there because I've only just come up. I might go there at 11:50 on the 31st of August if I've got nothing else. But I'm not going to go there yet. And, you know, they end up going somewhere else, or you get them at the last minute, you know, a month into the season, they haven't played in pre-season, et cetera, et cetera. It becomes very, very tough from there. And what I think you do, certainly initially, is you find you've got a squad with a load of players who are bottom three of the Premier League, top six of the Championship. That's what your squad is. The trick is to move on from there, is to evolve on from there. And people don't quite get how hard the Premier League is. And I don't mean that just in terms of the quality of the football. It is relentless in every possible sense. You are being interviewed all the time. You're under the microscope all the time. Everybody's talking. Yeah, I mean, Ipswich, you know, if you're, I don't know, let's say Leif Davis, the left back, he's had two great years in League One and in the Championship. A lot of people have talked about him, you know, former Leeds United Academy, all that sort of stuff. He's one for the future, might be an England player one day. And then all of a sudden, he has one bad game at the start of the season, and Alan Shearer's picking him out on Match of the Day or whoever it is. That must be a very difficult thing to go through as a footballer, to suddenly go from, well, everything in the garden's rosy, to you lose every week. And I think one of the other things, this is paradoxical, but I think it's true. In the Championship, you play 50 games a season, assuming you win a couple of cup games. You play 50 games a season. You, particularly from the beginning of December onwards, you play every Tuesday, pretty much. That's how it is. If you lose on a Saturday, you can fix it on the Tuesday. How many times have you heard a player say that in an interview? About a billion. In the Premier League, you get stuffed on Saturday, 5-0 by Liverpool, or whatever it is. You've got to wait until the following Saturday. And you look at the fixture list, and you're away at Manchester City. So you're not going to fix it then. And then then the week after that, you've probably got an absolute must-win game at home against somebody who might just be in the bottom four or five. You might be playing Crystal Palace, for instance, who might just be one of those teams that are down there. It's relentless in every sense, physically, technically, the skill level, mentally, the whole thing. It's a huge adjustment, and it's very difficult. You know, you look at Ipswich, they've bought really, really well for the next 3 years, I think. You know, they've bought a lot of good, youngish players. What they need, or needed, perhaps, was two or three old hands. A, that is very expensive. B, the old hands probably don't want to come. And C, when you get old hands, you've got to be very careful, because they can be great, or they can be there for the last big payday, and they can be an absolute bloody nightmare. And at West Brom, I've seen both of those. You couldn't have a better professional than Darren Fletcher, who came from United to the Army. He was fantastic for a couple of seasons. There are several others I'm not going to name. I might tell you off air, but who were an absolute disaster. And then, you know, that's human nature as well. You know, if you've won a lot of things and you've played at the top and whatever, you know, well, they're paying me a nice load of money, I'll turn up, but that'll do. It's a very, very difficult thing to make happen. And, you know, you look at Leicester and Southampton, and, of course, they came down under a cloud. I mean, Leicester, if they'd stayed in the Premier League, would have had God knows how many points deducted last season. So they had that problem. They lost Enzo Maresca at the end of last season after he got them up. And, you know, so mitigating circumstances there as well. But it's just a relentlessly difficult thing to do.
I think what strikes me about Ipswich's business, certainly, we will stick on transfers because it is important. Player quality is the biggest gap for me. And obviously the money is what can bridge that gap between the quality of your players that you've got. Philogene, 22, Omari Hutchinson, 20, Jacob Greaves, 23, Liam Delap, 21, Jack Clark, 23. Smodics was the only older player that they signed, but that was obviously his first season in the Prem, so you hopefully don't get the old handness from someone like that because he's desperate to sort of prove himself. So a lot of domestic-based players, as in Irish, Welsh, Scottish, English, that kind of thing, some who play for different national teams. Decent prices, and it might well look better in the Championship next season. I think my worry with a lot of that is it's so hard to get out of the Championship. It's so hard. I don't doubt that Ipswich on paper on the 1st of July or the 15th of June or whenever the official transfer deadline opens will have a squad that is probably in the top three of the Championship with Leicester and Southampton. But if somebody comes in for Liam Delap, who I think has got a big buyback for City, and he may well go for something else, I can't see Jack Clark getting a move. I don't think Jacob Greaves will get a move. Philogene just seems to bounce between Aston Villa and anyone who wants to pay him some money for dodgy FFP reasons. Or the other thing is, and I think this is what might well happen, it'll end up becoming a little bit of a roundabout between the bottom three and the top six, bottom three Prem, top six champs. So Leeds go up and Leeds say, actually, we'll have Philogene for 20 million because he's decent and we know we'll make our money back because when you go up again, Ipswich, and we go down, you'll probably just buy him back so we can just keep swapping the players. And I do think we might get to a point where it's the Dwight Gayle syndrome, isn't it? I can score 25 in the Championship, but I can only score 5 in the Prem. So actually, I'm going to end up getting a move back to the top six anyway. So I'm not really that bothered because I'm still getting my 15, 20 grand a week. I'm going to be playing for a good team. I'm going to be at the top end of the league, that kind of thing. For me, when I look at a lot of these transfers, I looked at Southampton's transfers as well. Leicester's transfers I looked at. They bought, again, young players, Anyone for me that spends £30 million on Oliver Skipp and Harry Winks over two seasons should just get relegated automatically anyway. I don't even think they should be allowed to play a game. Because if you think spending £30 million on those two midfielders is going to help, then you need help for me. Because they're not the type of players you can afford to play in a relegation battle that you know you're probably going to have. Even if you end up 15th, you'll have struggled to that 40 points or 38 points. You'll have had a really hard season. What I think people are doing is, and this is the thing that I think people are missing about Brighton, they're missing out the Chris Hughton season, the Steve Cooper at Forest. We'll talk about Forest in a bit, and I know they're a bit of an outlier because they signed 500 players in one go and broke loads of rules, but they realise we've just got to stay up at all costs, because if we spend 1 year in the league, we're better than the top three of the Championship. Therefore, we're the fourth worst team in the league. And if we can do that and do another year, we'll be maybe the fifth worst team in the league, or we get a Nuno and we end up in the top four or whatever happens. You know what I mean? So I think they're trying to skip that step. Ipswich, Luton, I've got no issues with what they're doing, because they've got to try and be sustainable over 3 to 5 years, because they weren't ready to come up. It's interesting, a team like Sheffield United and a team like Bournemouth, who did the League One, Championship, Premiership route and stayed up, they built over time. Wilder had a year in League One, then he had another year in the Championship mid-table, and then he got up. Eddie Howe, I think he built them up from, what, 21st in League Two, didn't he, I think, when he took over, something like that? So he built over, what, 5, 6, 7, a style of play, a system. So that's very different. Luton Ipswich had to do what they did just to get 15-plus points. Let's be brutally honest, they had to do something. Leicester and Southampton, I'm a little bit less forgiving of, because I just think they know what it takes to get in there, and they've just spent so badly. Like Southampton, who we'll come to in terms of their Championship, they've spent, you know, 20 million on Harwood Bellis. Maybe that's just how much a centre back costs these days. But Nottingham Forest, two centre backs cost 30 million combined. Do you know what I mean? And they are 10 times the player of what he is. No disrespect to Harwood Bellis, but they are much, much better players than him. He's English, he's 22. Oh yeah, he's 20 million. I do think there's a little bit of that naivety with some of these clubs when they're coming up in terms of what sort of system that they're trying to play or who they're trying to buy. One player I wanted to talk about, Dave, is Adam Armstrong, who was brilliant in the Championship for Southampton in the promotion season, can't even get a game for them in the Prem, but he immediately goes into a West Brom side who are challenging for the top six. Is that kind of symptomatic maybe of the gap between even the bottom four of the Prem, let's say, and the top six of the Championship?
You've said it all basically there. I mean, we're not only in a position where the promoted three get relegated, we're in a position where the relegated three get promoted or come very, very damn close to it. I mean, as you say, the Championship is an incredibly difficult division to get out of. And of course, only two go up automatically, and you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. So there's always that to mess it up. But it is such a different thing to play in the Premier League compared to the Championship. I mean, again, I'm boring people with West Brom here, I know, but I remember going back a long time, but 2002-03 was when Albion went up. That was the first time they'd been back in the Premier League First Division for, what, 17 years, I think it was, 85-86. And we went to Arsenal, which I think was the second or third game of the season. And, you know, I mean, of course, you'd watch the Premier League on television and whatnot, but to actually see it in the flesh, it was like watching football off another planet. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. Yeah, the way Arsenal played, the speed that they played at, the precision that they played at, it was terrifying. And then I had to go down into the tunnel to wait to interview Gary Megson. Fortunately, I was only doing the camera work, thank God. And I stood by three or four of the Arsenal players, and they were, I mean, they genuinely were like they were from another planet. Never seen blokes built like it before. I mean, they were athletes, proper, you know, real athletes. Now, that's 20 years ago. And you know, I'm not suggesting that Southampton, Leicester and Ipswich have got players who aren't incredible athletes, because of course they have, because they wouldn't have got anywhere near where they are. But that gulf between the two is just enormous. It's just ludicrous. And as you said earlier on, with the money that you get that one season in there and you're away. That is the trick. And I think It's a very difficult thing to do when you come up. I mean, like, for instance, Ipswich, they've got Kieran McKenna. Everybody was after Kieran McKenna in the summer. You remember he very nearly went to Chelsea or Manchester United or whatever, depending on which paper you read. And Ipswich made a big thing of keeping him, and rightly so, because he's done a fantastic job for 2 years. I don't think he's done a bad job this year either, to be honest. But in a sense, as you say, that Chris Hughton year, should they have had Big Sam there for 12 months? You know, give Kieran a 12-month sabbatical, get Big Sam to keep him up for 12 months and then start playing your football. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, really. But I think what you have to hope is that guys like, I don't know, Jacob Greaves, who they've brought in from Hull to play centre-half this season, people like him, Jack Clark's another one, they've had a year in the Premier League. Okay, it may only be the 1 year this year. If they can get up next season and get back, they've got some knowledge now. They're not going into it blind. They know a little bit of their way around the division. And that's what you're hoping for. In the same way, that's what Sheffield United will be hoping for if they get up this season, and Leeds will be hoping for if they get up this season. But the big thing is, what you were praying for is that one of those established teams has a nightmare, because that's your real chance. And that's what the three missed last year, because Forest ended up on 32 points. Okay, they had four deducted, but they ended up on 32 points. Now, if you can't get 33, that's your own bloody fault, isn't it, really? You know? It does point out how difficult it is in the Premier League. But if you can't get to 33 points, you don't deserve to be in the Premier League. You don't deserve to stay up. So you do have to have that year when somebody has a nightmare, and perhaps Wolves will have that nightmare this year. It ain't over yet, you know. Perhaps Wolves will struggle to get another 7 or 8 points. They might only get, you know, if Wolves got to 30, maybe one of those three can stay up. But you are relying on teams that have been there forever to have an absolute nightmare. But it can be done, as you say. You know, Brighton did it, Bournemouth did it, more recently Brentford have done it. I mean, Brentford, God, no disrespect at all to Brentford, because what they've done has been absolutely phenomenal. But 5 years ago, would you ever have thought Brentford were an established Premier League team? No, never in the world. Yeah, when they got up, it was, oh, well, they're going to be, they'll do what Luton just did, or what, you know, they'll have a lovely year and that'll be nice, and then they'll be back to the, and they've been fantastic. The trouble with being a Brentford is it's a high wire act. You've got to get everything right every season. And one of those bits falls away. If Thomas Frank goes somewhere, who knows?
It's interesting with Brentford. 10 years ago to this season, actually, 2014-15, Middlesbrough played Brentford in the playoff semi-final. I think we beat them 5-2 on aggregate or something like that. And that was amazing that Brentford had got in the playoffs. There was a little bit of needle before the game about who was going to win, all that sort of stuff. And we got into the playoff final against Norwich and got beat. But never did I think we'd be still sitting with only one Premier League season in that decade. And then subsequently after that Premier League season, when we got relegated, we've been in the playoffs twice in that time. And it's so difficult. But it's also really difficult if you're stupid.
Absolutely.
And Middlesbrough got relegated in 2017 and gave Gary Monk £50 million, and then sacked him in December. It's just stupidity. It's absolute stupidity. And what Brighton and Brentford are doing, and more so Nottingham Forest now, is they're trying to reduce the stupidity gap. If we do stupid things, remember when teams used to go down and spend, I don't know, £15 million on some random striker or a player who'd never really done it anywhere, and you think, why have you bought them? You're definitely going to go down. That's just silly. Whereas Harry Redknapp came up and bought all the Premier League players nobody else wanted. And I was like, well, there might be a bunch of misfits, but they can all play in the Premier League. So actually, they know a little bit about what you're saying there about Greaves. Like, they know the game. They know what it's going to be like. They know the physicality that's required, the dedication, blah, blah, blah. And I think we're probably missing a little bit of that. And obviously, Forrest, you know, being a massive outlier in the sense that they bought, I think it was 24 players in one or two transfer windows or whatever. Obviously, were deducted points. But if you stay up, who cares? As long as you don't get deducted enough points to take you down, then actually, it doesn't matter what style of football you play. Every Nottingham Forest fan will say to you now, this is the best time, maybe since the mid-90s, they've ever had post-Brian Clough. And it's been absolutely incredible for them. And I think lots of club accounts have been coming out at the moment. And I think Brentford's club accounts came out and they'd lost X amount of money or whatever. But you look at the revenues, streams and things, and they're kind of, I think 160, 170 million, I think, for revenues. Middlesbrough, who, you know, a top six championship, top eight championship team, let's say, our revenue was 32 million. And Brentford are, let's say, mid-table Premier League team, and they're close to £200 million revenue every season, and we're about 30. Just that alone, the fact that you can only lose a certain amount of money means that we've had to prop up the club effectively with going on for 50 million of player, 60 million of player sales in the last 3 years, which again makes it really difficult to actually build a squad long term. I think Brentford had sold Andre Gray, Neil Maupay, Ollie Watkins, Ben Rama, all before they got promoted, with Tony and Mbeumo, the two strikers. And that's the other thing, I suppose, is you need to have some Premier League ready players. I think, like you were saying there, Dave, about sort of the physical aspects of it. You know, no disrespect again to Adam Armstrong, his biggest attribute in the Championship is his lightning quick speed. But when you're in the Prem and you're playing in the bottom three, you're just another quick player, because everybody's got a couple of quick fullbacks who can cover you dead easy. They've got a centre back who can run or keep up with you at least. The goalkeepers are quick, so they're going to come out and see off any ball that gets played over the top, whereas obviously in the Championship it might not be there. Dwight Gill probably suffered a little bit similar, so it's really challenging for them. I suppose that thing about the style of play is another thing that can come into it as well. Obviously, our manager Michael Carrick is quite similar to Kieran McKenna. They sort of came, Carrick and McKenna were at Man United at a similar time, played a similar system with kind of that lopsided left back, who effectively your left back is a left winger, your right winger cuts in and makes sort of an extra forward, etc., etc. Russell Martin, though, he was very sort of even more principled, I suppose, than those two. Was that ever going to work at Southampton in the Premier League with the type of players that he had? Considering, and this is the other thing that people are forgetting about, they were only in inverted commas, fourth in the Championship, and I think conceded 62 goals in the Championship, or something around that amount. That there's no way that that is going to translate, is that if Howard Bellis is going to be a main centre-back and Flynn Downes, who I actually think is a decent player, is going to be your main starting midfielder. Was Martin always going to be on a bit of a hide into nothing, whatever he did this season, because of sort of that attitude to football that he's got?
I think you're right. There are certain managers who, particularly in the Premier League level, need to be managing a top 16, because otherwise I've got no hope. And, you know, Russell Martin, I think he's one of them. Not that I think he'll ever get to a top 16. That's a whole different story. But to try and pass... I mean, I know it's not a direct comparison, but to try and Manchester City away past Manchester City when you're Southampton is not an easy concept to have. If your entire goal is to have more possession than the opposition team and win the game by, fair enough, if you've got the ball, they can't score. That's fine in theory, but if you've got the ball with your centre halves, well, they might score, because the chances are that your centre halves are going to give the ball away. I think. It's really difficult, because there's a part of me that says, why did you sack Russell Martin? Because this is what you've set your football club up to do for the last 2 years. This is who you are. This is what Southampton now is. So you know he got you out of the one division. You allowed him to buy the players in the summer. Okay, I know the manager doesn't buy the players in the same way anymore, but nonetheless, he has the final say, I guess, on the players that you had in the summer. This is how you set up your club. This is how you want to be. Well, what did you think was going to happen, really? I would say this, coming from where I come from, but there's going to come a time when somebody plays 4-4-2 with four defenders who can defend, a couple of big blokes up front, batter the shit out of the opposition, and they're going to wipe the floor with everybody, because nobody's going to know what to do with them when they come up and do it. I wonder, well, if you are coming up from the Championship, maybe that's the way to go. And you know, I'm doing him a disservice, but Nottingham Forest, not a million miles away from an older-fashioned style of football, let's say. And it's done them quite well, because nobody knows what to do with Chris Wood. Nobody knows, you know. And that's, I think, one of... Delap is a throwback to an older style of centre-forward, and nobody knows what to do with him. Which, I mean, you know, he reminds me of Cyril Regis a little bit at times, the way he'll get the ball and he'll run up it, and the defenders have no idea what to do with this, because they haven't seen this kind of thing before, because everybody now walks the ball into the net. So what's he doing running with the thing from 35 yards away? I don't know what to do with him. It is really, really difficult because, I mean, you're absolutely right. The Chris Hughton season is the pivotal season for Brighton because that season doesn't happen. They get relegated. This Brighton doesn't happen. I don't know where you square the circle. And then, you know, I mean, I remember thinking, God, that's harsh on Chris Hughton getting the push after all that he's done. And okay, they had a plan to move forward and do something different, and it's worked fantastically well. But it's also that thing now that social media has amplified, whereby if our team's not playing great football, this isn't up to scratch. We've got to be playing great football. What we actually mean is we've got to be playing great football and we've got to be winning every week. Now, if you're coming up from playing against Sheffield Wednesday and the Albion and Coventry and Norwich and whatnot, and you're suddenly playing against Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, that's a big step up to be trying to do the same kind of thing with broadly the same kind of players. It is a step too far. I think, you know, to go back to your original question, I think we are probably going to see a lot more of the three coming up, coming down. Certainly twos out of three. I think every year it's going to be, unless it's a remarkable sort of freaky kind of year. But who's coming up this season? Leeds, Sheffield United, Burnley, let's say, the three who went down. Are they any better than they were when they came down? Probably not. Leeds came down 2 years ago. Are they any better than they were then? I don't know. I wouldn't have said that they were, you know, particularly impressive. So are they going to be the same position next year? You know, where is this Sheffield United going to find an extra 11, 12, 13 points to what they had last season? Okay, I know Chris Wilder wasn't there all through the Premier League season last year, and he obviously gets a tune out of Sheffield United. But that's a big thing to ask for, and I don't know that they can do it.
But when Sheffield United came up last time, they had something that no one knew what to do with, which was the overlapping centre-backs, because he'd built that team over 3 years. Same with Eddie Howe when he got Bournemouth up. Nobody was used to kind of a team that was so fast and direct, like you say about the 4-4-2. I've just realised, actually, Liam Delap should go to Forest. Because imagine Delap is like Chris Wood's understudy for 18 months. I think Wood's just got a new deal, hasn't he? But you'd have Wood, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White and Elanga all running at you with the ball, because they can all comfortably hold the ball. They can all dribble. Like you say, teams would not have a clue what to do, because it's really, really hard to defend against someone who's running at you with pace and can control it. This is why, you know, players like Salah do so well, because if you're in a 1v1 with Salah, it's not going to end well for you, because you know that's sort of his meat and drink, isn't it? That's what he's going to come up to. I've got a feeling that Leeds might be okay, because I think they understand the stakes of what being in the Premier League means long term. Because actually, they're a really wealthy club out of the Premier League. Like, they've always got the most money. They always make a ton of money in the Championship. Yes, they can't always spend as much as they want, but they're bumped up with parachute payments as well anyway, because they had a couple of extra years there. Burnley, for me, will be absolute fodder. Like, yes, they might have only conceded hardly any goals, but if anyone looks at any stats or any XG or whatever, James Trafford has basically prevented 15 goals this season. And now part of that is to do with, like me and Dave will know, Championship strikers not actually being that accurate a lot of the time. And part of that is him being a good goalkeeper at this level. But he also got dropped at one point last season for Murich, who Ipswich basically couldn't wait to replace with Walton, I think, played in December, for most of December, or back in November. And then they actually bought a really good goalkeeper in Alex Palmer from West Brom, who I actually think is a really, really good signing. So they couldn't wait. And he obviously displaced Trafford last season. So if he's the goalkeeper who's going to come up with Burnley, hopefully he's learnt, you know, and he is a decent keeper. I think he's probably going to have an all right career, but you've got to have something. I think as well, Farker knows kind of what is required at this level. Whether he keeps them up or he gets sacked or whatever, you just don't know, obviously, at this point. But I've got the Premier League table in front of me now, and I'm just thinking back to the last 10 years of the Championship. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Newcastle, Bournemouth, Brighton, Fulham, Villa, Brentford, who are 6th to 11th, I think they've all been in the Championship in the last 10 years, I think. Maybe even extending to Crystal Palace, potentially. I can't remember if they were just before. And then you've got Tottenham, Man U, West Ham, Everton. Now, Tottenham, this is probably a bit of a blip. They probably go back into the top 10, top 8. I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen at Man United? Goodness me. I mean, that is a, you know, a mental club. West Ham again, you know, if they've got Potter all season, might it end up being a little bit better, but it's not going to be sixth better, is it? It's not going to be seventh. It's going to be 10th, 11th. Then you've got Wolves. I mean, Cunha signed a new deal, which is great for Wolves, but he's also had a release clause put into that contract, I think at 65 million. If I'm Arsenal, just pay the money. If I'm Liverpool, pay the money. If I'm Tottenham, pay the money. If I'm Man U, pay the money. Chelsea, just get him. If that's his clause, you just do it, wouldn't you? So immediately then you take out of Wolves, what, 10 goals and 5 assists-ish? That's half their total, pretty much. So actually you're looking at some of these clubs and thinking, where are they going to get it from? For me, it's got to be that club that's built a little bit better over time. And maybe Leeds, who have kept some of the players who they had in the Premier League, might find it a little bit more straightforward. I think Burnley are going to be too lightweight. Sheffield United have got new owners, so maybe they'll have a little bit more spending power. But again, you can only lose a certain amount of money. They haven't got big revenues anyway. So I think it's interesting. One thing, I suppose, about the money and how you build a squad and maintain a squad with this, you know, 110 million that you're allowed to lose over 3 years or whatever, then you've got it's reduced if you get relegated for the championship, etc. There's potentially going to be a move to anchoring and squad cost ratio, potentially. It's already in play a lot in the UEFA competition, so you're only allowed to spend a percentage of your revenue. How on earth people think this is not favouring the big clubs? It's just absolutely baffling. Like Borough, who get 30 million revenue and 20 million player sales, 50 million. You're allowed to spend, I think, 75% on signings, agents' fees and wages. But Man City have got 750 million revenue. Like, hang on a minute. How is this levelling at any kind of playing field whatsoever? So underneath all of that would be anchoring, which means that there would be a multiplier against the lowest team's income from the previous season, which they're roughly saying would get you to about 400 million, 450 million. But still, you're only allowed to spend a percentage of that on your squad. Does this mean, likes of Borough's chairman, Steve Gibson, who's a multi-millionaire in a billionaire's world, will end up having to find someone who's actually got money who we can sell 20% of the club to, probably from America or, you know, wherever, who can then spend that money to hopefully then keep us up? Do you think that if this does come in, we might start to see less of what Ipswich have done, where they're sort of preparing for next season and the one after? It might just be, actually, we've got an American owner sitting in here who's worth 10 billion quid. He's more than happy to spend 300 million in one hit instead of 120, so we can be better than Everton immediately. Do you think we might get to that point where that pushes the closed shop even more or widens that gap between the two leagues even more?
Well, Birmingham City will be hoping so, I would have thought, because that would be ideal for them after they've got promoted this season into the Championship. I mean, if they could spend as much as they wanted next year, then they'd be on their way, wouldn't they? And in a sense, Birmingham City goes back to what you were saying about Bournemouth and Brighton and Brentford. They've had this season to rebuild the football club and to basically buy a Championship team, really, and perhaps a little bit better than that. And they, if they were to get in the promotion picture next season, they would probably be better equipped than a lot of teams because they've had that run at it. And I think having that run at it is really important. But you know, you look at the Premier League table now, and forget this season. Let's assume that the three that came up go down for the sake of argument. There is nothing in that 17 there that makes you think, yeah, whoever comes up might finish above them. Who in that lot is going to get? Yeah, I say this, and we all know that every so often somebody just has a year of disaster and drops like a stone from out of nowhere. But looking at it logically at the minute, without knowledge of something terrible going on behind the scenes at any one of those clubs, which of those 17 is going to only get 31 points next season? None of them, I would say. So, you know, you are going to have to get 35, 36, 37 points, which seems to be getting increasingly difficult for the teams that come up. And the teams that come up increasingly seem to get battered as well by Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City, Chelsea, Newcastle, whatever, which murders your confidence. You know, it's one thing if you're losing 1-0, 2-1, 3-1. But if you're getting beat 4s and 5s, then confidence-wise, it's difficult to go out there again the following week thinking that you're gonna get out of it. If you go back to when Fair Play came in, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was, it seemed like quite a good idea at the time-ish, in the sense of, well, yeah, we can't keep having these teams at the top spending absolute fortunes. But you know, the law of unintended consequences has come along, and it's absolutely stuffed everybody else. And you know, when you, as you say, when you're working on percentages, well, 10% of 700 million is a lot more than 10% of 7 million. And how do you bridge that gap? What do you do? As Newcastle United, I mean, Newcastle United got the richest owners in the universe. And okay, they've made a bit of progress. They've made much. You know, they're not stuck in the bottom six anymore. But they've had one Champions League year. They might get another one this year. They might not. They might win a cup this year. They might not. But it's they haven't blown everybody away the way that Manchester City did, you know, 12 years ago when they got their money coming. It's not good forget anything else. Looking at it as a neutral, it's not good for football that it just becomes so sort of ossified at the top and you know what it is and the same at the bottom. You know what's going to happen before the season starts. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily have had Liverpool winning the league. You probably might have had Manchester City winning the league. Wouldn't necessarily have had Forest in third. But, you know, you would have broadly had, you'd have had four of the top six, perhaps five of the top six, and you probably would have had the bottom three. That's not a good way for football to go forward. They always used to say, oh, the great thing about the First Division, the great thing about the Premier League, anybody can beat anybody. I don't see a lot of that happening anymore.
No, definitely not. And I think that another thing that they always churn out is that, you know, promotion and relegation is integral to the Premier League, and we've had so many different... And it's been brilliant, you know, that a Cardiff, a Hull, Reading, you know, Barnsley, whoever's had their day in the sun, some better than others, some for a longer period than others. But actually, when you look at it, looking now, you know, Southampton have got 9 points. They're going to... Like, where they need to get another win to not be Derby. And when you're basically trying to get a win to not be the worst team to ever play in the league after spending the money you've spent, 100 million or whatever, that is incredible. Like, I have no idea what Derby spent when they only got 11 points, but I'm pretty sure they had Kenny Miller up front, and not Kenny Miller when he was in any kind of like Rangers form, when it looked like he was going to be, you know, a half decent sort of striker. Maybe I've got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure of it. They've got to get another win from somewhere, and it's pretty desperate because you haven't got the player quality there behind you. Like, you look at Newcastle, might lose Isak. I don't think he's going to go, personally. I think he's going to have one more year, maybe, because he is going to cost over 100 million. And all these clubs pretending that they can't spend any money, if they suddenly splash 100 million on a striker, changes the conversation a little bit about, you know, we've got to play more tours in Asia and whatever else. And you look at Liverpool, fantastic this season, really great. But they're 20 points difference at the minute to Man City. It's not going to be 20 points next season. It might be 5. It might be 1. It might be 10 points plus for Man City. So immediately that changes where Nottingham Forest are. They'll have the Champions League potentially, or the Europa League to play. You look at Spurs, who are probably better than most of the Europa League teams or conference, whichever one they're in. And they're 13th in the Premier League. It's almost kind of like, we already have a Super League. It's called the English Premier League. It's not, you know, a European Super League, but it pretty much is, because you can't get a job there if you're an English manager, unless you're Graham Potter, basically. You look at the rest of the clubs and you think, actually, I look at Villa in 10th and I think, oh, if we played Villa 38 times in a season, we might win one, draw a couple, but we're probably going to lose. And they've just got Rashford and Marcos Asensio in January. And you think, what? Like, and you're only 10th. Like, it's quite crazy when you actually look at it. And how many things have gone right for Bournemouth? They have had a really bad injury spell as well, so they might have been even better off, Bournemouth. But they've got a really top manager who's quite unique, who's very different. Like, that's a risk for anyone. But because they've got a couple of seasons of money in the Prem behind them, and they sold Solanke, you can take a little bit of a risk. West Ham, I'll just bin your manager before Christmas and we'll get a few new players in. We know we'll get past 35. Everton, get rid of your manager, bring someone a bit more solid in. We know we'll get past 32 points. They've already got 32 already. They're unbeaten in 5. Done. Southampton go get a random manager who'd been sacked already this season and think, what are you doing? How is that? Like you said, Dave, before, was Russell Martin good for that football club? Sacking Russell Martin, sorry, good for that football club? Because actually, next season, they probably would have passed most teams off the pitch. Look at Leicester getting rid of Steve Cooper and getting Van Nistelrooy in. Van Nistelrooy had managed PSV with a pretty strong team for the Eredivisie. Didn't win the league. Like, I'm not being funny. At least Slaughter won a league title. You know what I mean? You think, actually, where he's been, he's had that experience before where you've got to, you know, be good over 34, 38, 46 games or whatever. And he's got that feeling before. Not saying Southampton should have got Big Sam in or whatever, but looking about the club and thinking, we're not really going to get enough points here, but actually let's get the guy in for next season. If it doesn't work out for whatever reason, Russell Martin, who's the player, who's the manager that we want long-term for 3 years, for 4 years or whatever. But good on Ipswich for sticking with McKenna. I mean, I always knew they would, to be fair. I think whatever happened this season, McKenna wasn't going anywhere unless somebody's going to pay 5 million quid for him or 10 million quid for him, like a West Ham or whatever, or Everton or something like that. But I think he'll have probably a good season again next year in the Championship. But it does feel like, certainly when I look at one team we haven't mentioned, actually, is Fulham, who bounced around for a bit, didn't they? But Marco Silva, again, really clever manager. They've recruited well. They've basically bought players that, this is what I can't get my head around. You look at their team, you think they had Leno in goal, and you think, hang on a minute, he was at Arsenal for 20 million quid, wasn't he? Iwobi's been around for ages in the Prem, hasn't he? Even Raul Jimenez. I love Adama Traore, you know, like one of my own family. He's amazing. Not amazing in terms of being able to cross a football, but again, he must have played 100 Premier League games by now. So they've built that squad of what I would maybe call like a Portsmouth, where it's like, hang on, he's played 100 games in the Prem. Get him in. He's played 50 games, scored 50 goals in the Prem. Get him in. He's going to be better than Adam Armstrong. You know, it's that kind of thing, isn't it? If you were to predict then, Dave, maybe not so much from a team point of view, but from a football point of view, my big thing is I think the Premier League and the football league need to recombine. That is my thing that needs to happen to try and solve some of these things. Do you think that we'll get any structural changes, whether it's financial, whether it's like in league structure, whether it's in wage caps or squad? Do you think anything's going to come in the next, let's say, 5 years that might actually try and support these teams to bridge that gap?
I don't think it will, to be honest, because, I mean, the number of clubs that you would have to have voting for it, you're not going to get it, you know. I mean, if you, as we were just saying, you know, you look at that top 17 there in the Premier League, why do they want any change? Absolutely, they don't want any change because, you know, they're doing very nicely, thanks. And the likelihood is that that 17 will still be there. You know, a couple of them might have gone down and gone back up again. But the likelihood is that the vast majority of that 17 will still be there in 5 years' time, picking up the huge checks from the Premier League, you know, on the gravy train forevermore. I can't see any appetite within the Premier League to do anything like that. The bigger worry is, as more and more teams go into American ownership, and we all know what American sport is like, the chances that 15 Premier League football clubs will say, let's not have any relegation, eh, lads? That, I think, is a possibility, which would kill it stone dead, really, I think. Because you know, you've got to have that, even if they are going to survive, you've got to have that kind of jeopardy to make it work. So I don't see any appetite within it. Because what we basically said over the last 50-odd minutes is the Premier League has made so many clubs so rich that they are, other than some ludicrous self-inflicted implosion or some catastrophic piece of bad luck somewhere along the line, they are safe forevermore. I mean, look at Tottenham, you know, the injury crisis that they've had this year and how many players, you know, they've had like 12, 13, 14 players missing at one. They're 13th in the Premier League, which is supposedly the best league in the world. Now, you'd have thought if they'd had 13, 14 players missing for big chunks of the season, they'd be rock bottom. But no, there they are, quite happily, 13th. That says to me that they're doing quite nicely out of the Premier League concept, and we won't be bothering with changing that, thanks very much.
Yeah, I think Kieran Maguire was on a podcast, Football Finance Guy, and he was saying basically Tottenham are the best club in the Premier League because their wages are around 50% of their revenue, I think, something like that, whereas in the Championship it's like 98% of your revenue spent on wages. They make loads of money from the stadium. They don't spend loads of money on players, so actually there's not lots of money going out. They make a decent amount of money from player sales. But actually, it's not what fans want. Fans don't want to win the balance sheet. They want to win some trophies. And most Tottenham fans would say, give us a trip to Wembley in the Carabao. You know, give us a trip to the semi-finals of the FA Cup at Wembley. And maybe we've got a chance of getting a final and win the trophy. And we've said this a couple of times, that it all ends up coming down to money over glory. And, you know, that is really important for Bournemouth. That is really important for Brighton. That is really important for Brentford, because they are trying to be a little bit different. And their winning a trophy is finishing in the top eight, getting in the Conference League. You know, I actually think now what will happen is those sorts of clubs are actually valuing those European competitions more as well. Whereas when the big clubs end up in the Conference League, they couldn't care less. They play the second 10. But actually, if I was Marcus Tavernier or Semenyo or someone like that, Ryan Christie, I'm thinking, do you know what I want? Like West Ham, I want to go and win that European trophy. So when I retire at 35, having played 500 games for Bournemouth, I can tell my kids I was the player who got that club to a European final and won a trophy. Like, how amazing is that? I do think there's still clubs out there. Newcastle, especially for that, they want that bit of legacy, because they're not winning football clubs. You know what I mean? They've kind of been in and around lower divisions at certain points, especially at Newcastle's first and second division bounce between for a little bit. So I do think, I mean, for me, I'd radically shake everything up, but I ain't got a billion pounds to pay anybody to bring a football club into maybe half a billion. But I do think football, for me, the key takeaway is football clubs who come need to be much smarter. Know your limits. What kind of style of football works? I'd be looking at whoever's 7th to 12th and working out what has got them to 7th to 12th. It's normally a reasonable defence with a couple of big lads at the back who love getting their head in. They'll get you a few set-piece goals. You need some absolute terriers in midfield with legs. I mean, look at John McGinn. John McGinn, for me, was a second-tier player for ages, and then you're like, hang on a minute, he can actually play football. But he started to play more football the better and better he got and the more comfortable he got in the league. But he was always an absolute pain in the backside, McGinn, because he wouldn't leave you alone. But you need that. And I think Forrest have certainly developed that, where they've got those players who they're just annoying because you can't get away from them. I think Palace have got that a little bit. You know, Fulham have got that. Those kinds of teams, what are they doing and what are they doing well? Not, we're going to play passing football from our goal line with Aaron Ramsdale and Howard Bellis in defence. You think, it's just really silly. Or Fulham go, we've got Adama Traore who can run as fast as Usain Bolt. And we bought the striker for our club who he actually knows how to play with in Jimenez, and he can just chip the ball on his head. We say it's a simple game made complicated by the people who play it and run it, isn't it? You know, look at these teams and think, what are they doing? They're athletic, they're physical, and they're direct. And you just, that's the thing that I think Ipswich, Leicester, and Southampton are missing. Maybe Wolves to a certain extent. I feel like Wolves are like a continental relegation fodder, if you know what I mean. Like, they've got some nice players, decent on the ball. Obviously, they've got Cunha, who's that difference maker for them. But without a big shake-up for me, I think it's going to be, yeah, maybe a growing gap. But let's see if these new rules come in and clubs can spend hundreds of millions in one go. As a prediction, Dave, who do you think is going to come up from the Championship this season? So we've got Leeds, Sheffield United, who are kind of seeming to pull away a little bit. We've got Scott Parker's sort of uber defensive, the most defensive team I've ever seen in the Championship, probably ever. Sunderland are knocking about there. West Brom's run is absolutely stinking between these next 12 games or whatever. I think they play loads of teams out the top half. Frank Lampard is, for me, ridden on Mark Robbins' coattails for the squad that he's built there at Coventry. But they're on an amazing run. Not convinced by my own team. Who do you think are going to be the three that that go up?
I think you're right about Leeds and Sheffield United. I mean, I think they'll see it through. I don't want to say Burnley. Nothing against the Burnley supporters out there. And Burnley's a perfectly fine club. But I would like it to be somebody else, just to shake the Premier League up. Because, you know, I think it's dreary. Yeah, you know, it's the same in Scotland. Because only one team goes down and then it's a playoff. There's hardly ever any change in the Premier League in Scotland. It's 11 of the 12 teams every year. Yeah, it's boring. I mean, it would be... I have a sneaking suspicion for Coventry. Just because, you know, it always seems to be, doesn't it? You know, if you time your run right, of course, that's Frank Lampard's Coventry, not just Coventry. If you time your run right, that can be the thing for the playoffs, can't it? I think they've got a, from absolutely nowhere, and, you know, I can't say that when Frank Lampard went to Coventry, I thought, oh yeah, they're going to be great now. That we know. I thought it was a good move for him to go and get a bit of work done in the Championship again to try and, you know, work at a proper football club away from the headlights and all that sort of stuff. I didn't see him doing this, but I think they got a fair chance.
And they're a very sensible football club, Coventry. They've been run very, very well, considering the absolutely disastrous position that they were in when Mowbray was there, maybe even that time. Their numbers have been pretty good all season. I think Robin's just maybe had gone as far as he could with them, maybe players not doing exactly what they wanted, but it's Robin's team, it's Robin's squad, and Lampard hasn't made a lot of tweaks, but do you need to sometimes when you come into a football club? We're all about these styles and way of playing and all that. Do you know what? He's won 7 out of 8 games. I'm sure the Cov fans are absolutely buzzing on the terraces, not for, you know, how many passes they complete in 90 minutes, but they're beating everybody. Simple as that, isn't it? You're winning games, winning football games. I still can't get over the fact that Burnley have conceded 9 goals in a football season after 34 games. It's absolutely stupid. Again, for anybody out there who likes the stats, they should, in inverted commas, have conceded 27 goals and they've let in 9, which is unbelievable. Interestingly, Leeds have conceded the amount they should have, but if they had a proper goalkeeper and not Melier in goal, I feel like they probably would have won the league already because he just chucks a gutter ball in the net every 4-5 games. But you look at the Championship and Borough, we'd lost 5 out of 6 and we're 3 points off 5th. So for entertainment value and kind of longevity into the season, you do get a bit of good value at the Championship, and hopefully that wouldn't go if the Premier League brings in these new financial rules and we end up having lots more money coming down as well as filtering through to the Championship. So we will end it there, otherwise we'll keep on going on and on and on about the Premier League and the Championship, but maybe we'll probably revisit this when the three teams are actually promoted and when they're relegated as well, maybe even into the early next season to sort of check on how they're doing in terms of their signings and their state of play. But thank you everybody for listening to the game. Thanks Dave for the chat as always, and we will be back with more modern football chat on the game, so we'll see you soon.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.